What are the obstacles to devotion? Because our business is serving Krishna and remembering Him. And that's success we want. We want to go back home, back to God, and attain Krishna Prema. We don't care about success in business or enemies or friends or enemies, happiness or distress, honor or dishonor, heat or cold, pleasure or pain, it's all the same. But we care about loving Krishna, undivided love for Krishna and serving Krishna at every moment without motivation. So the obstacles for us, the vigna for us, the bhakti vigna, the obstacles to devotion are the basic anarthas: kama, krodha, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, madness, foolishness, ignorance about bhakti. Ignorance, it's called sadhya sadhana tattva vibram. Illusion about the sadhya, what is the goal of life, and the illusion about the sadhana. In other words, it's all part of the illusion about the sadhana is to think I have to worship demigods along with Krishna. This is illusion. That one is suffering from illusion if he still believes that or thinks that. So these type of vigna, these are vigna, or obstacles to bhakti, they're destroyed by the mercy of Lord Nisringadeva. So therefore we sing, Tavakara Kamala Vare Nakam Adbhuta Sringham. This wonderful Lord, Adbhuta Sringham, he's so wonderful and amazing that just with the scratching of his nails, he can remove all the Aranyakashipus from our heart. Because he ripped out the heart of Nisringadeva ripped out the heart of Aranyakashipu because his heart was polluted. Aranyakashipu's heart was polluted with ignorance about sadhana, sadhya tattva brahm. He was in ignorance about the goal of life. He thought that sense gratification was the goal of life. Hiranya Kashipu. Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means soft bed. So he thought that enjoying women was the goal of life and material opulence was supportive. And the secondary goal of life. So gold, he had lots of gold and so many women. He conquered women all over the universe. He's extremely attractive, also powerful. So this heart, his heart was polluted, so the Nisringadeva ripped out his heart. So with those same nails, those chisel-like nails, we prayed Lord Nisringadeva, he does a little surgery on the devotee's heart. He does a little open heart surgery with his nails are his scalpel. And he cuts open the heart, like psychic surgery in the Philippines. He opens the chest cavity and removes invisibly. We don't actually start bleeding and our guts fall all over the place. But invisibly, he enters our heart. Lord Nisringadeva enters our heart and removes. He rips out the root of lust, greed, anger, and envy, so that we can serve Krishna without deviation, without interruption, and without illusion, exclusively in ananya bhakti. So we don't have to separately worship Lord Ganesh, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, we see that the six Goswamis, Sanatana Goswami, every single day, either he did his bhajan next to Lord Shiva, or he went to have darshan of Lord Shiva, in the mood of Gopishwar, the protector of a particular lila stali like Chakaleshwar, Shiva, who's a very ancient form of Lord Shiva, and Manasi Ganga Govardhan. Sanatana Goswami did his bhajan right next door to him. So he was always praying to Lord Shiva for Prajabhakti. And when he was in Madan Mohan temple, he would come down the mountain every day and go to Gopishwar and have darshan. And the Goswamis have written pranam mantras. Raghunath Das Goswami has written a pranam mantra to Gopishwar. And Rupa Goswami has written a pranam mantra to Gopishwar. And Vishnu Chakravartipad has written a pranam mantra to Gopishwar and Sankalpa Kalpadruma. So all of the acharyas in their line, I even think in the Yoga Pit in Mayapur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in the backside, he installed a deity of Lord Shiva, proto-Maya, British Shiva or something, and as the protector of the Dham, protector of the Yoga Pit, the equivalent of Gopishwar in Vrindavan. Gopishwar is protecting the Yoga Pit. The Yoga Pit is the meeting place of Radha and Krishna. In Vrindavan, it's at Vamshivat, actually it's at Govindastali. So on the northeast side of Govindastali is situated temple of Gopeshwar. That's the, in this world, it's actually like that also, northeast section. And also in the spiritual world, the same topography. So his role is to remove Purusha Abhiman, the enjoying spirit, and to purify our ego so that we can actually be qualified and become Gopi Anugata, followers of the Gopis, and enter Vrindavan to serve Krishna, pure love of the mood of the Gopis. So if we have that understanding of Tattva, of Shiva's position in relation to Krishna, Krishna's Leela, and we're worshipping, offering a flower to Shiva with that understanding, that, and with that meditation, which is the same meditation of the Goswamis and our Acharya Varg, that please grant me the eligibility to enter Braj Leela and serve the lotus feet of Radharani and Krishna, then it's all right to worship Lord Shiva. Because we find that our Acharya Varg, Acharya Parampara, were worshipping Gopeshwar Shiva. But that's it. Nobody else. No Ganesh, Durga, Kartikeya, Skanda, this, that, other thing. We don't find. But Gopeshwar, because he himself is such a great Krishna Bhakta, he wanted to enter Krishna's pastimes, and so he gave up his Abhiman. Whereas Lakshmi, who was so near and dear to Vishnu, she could not enter the pastimes because she could not give up her Mahishi Abhiman. But I'm the queen. She was attached. Lord Shiva gave up all attachments. I'm nothing. I'm ready to do whatever is necessary to enter Krishna's Leela and serve him there. So he gave up his Shivahood. He gave up his position, his prestige, his name, his everything. He gave up his form. Lakshmi, there's no discussion about Lakshmi giving up her form. She's already female. So she didn't have to go through much transformation. But she was still attached to her position, identity. And she couldn't give up her relationship with her husband, as even described. That when Krishna, you know, one time Yogamaya came, and I described this before, one time Yogamaya came to Vailvan, Bilvavan, which is across the Yamuna, Purnamasi, and she said, "Oh, Lakshmi Devi, what are you doing? What are you, you're sitting under this bale tree and you're eating a few bale leaves every day and you're undergoing such intense austerities. What is your idea? What is your motivation?" "Oh, I'm trying to enter the rasa dance. I'm so much attracted to Krishna, the form of Krishna. I want to serve him in the rasa dance." And she said, "Oh, very well, I can help you. Are you ready? Can you give up your husband? Will you reject your husband, Narayan? Are you ready to give him up? Just reject him?" And Lakshmi said, "What are you talking about? I'm the wife. I'm the eternal consort of Lord Narayan. This is my dharma, my sati dharma, the dharma of a chaste wife. How can I reject my husband?" So Yogamaya said, "Okay, are you willing to follow behind the gopis, the footsteps of the gopis, and carry water pots on your head and make these patties, cow dung patties?" She said, "What are you talking about? I'm a queen. I'm just only servants will do that. Make this cow dung for cooking or carry water. I can't do that." So Yogamaya was testing her and seeing that she's attached. And then another time, Krishna came and asked the same series of questions. He said, "Oh, Yogamaya, I mean, Lakshmi Devi, what are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, I'm so much attracted to you. I want to dance with you, and Rasa dance wants to serve you." He said, "All right, come on. Let me ask you a few questions to test your eligibility, your adhikar." It's almost similar to like an Indian devotee who worships the demigods along with Krishna. And Krishna comes and says, "Okay, you want to come to the spiritual world? Are you exclusively devoted to me? Do you have undivided devotion? Do you have full trust in me? Do you have full faith on me, in me? What about Lord Shiva or Ganesh?" "Oh, you know, they're still pretty important to me." "Okay, you stay here." "Stay here with them. They're here, you stay with them." So, if this is the idea, if your guru is sanctioning such worship, because all worship for a devotee comes through guru. Guru gives mantras for puja. And usually they're Vishnu mantras or Krishna mantras, because our Ishtadeva is Krishna. And he doesn't doesn't say, okay, here's Ishta mantras. Like we say, Guru mantra. What is your Guru mantra? Guru mantra means that the Ishta Deva, the Guru, is that becomes the Ishta Deva, the disciple. And the mantras that the Guru has received, he passes on to the disciple. So, generally, the Guru doesn't give Vaishnav mantras, Vaishnav diksha, and then throw in a few Shiva chalisas, a few Hanuman chalisas on the side. But the disciples often independently maintain an independent program, thinking they know more than the Guru. Due to family attachment and due to tradition and experience. So they're holding on to misconceptions. Their Krishna conception is not purified. It's not purified, although they may think, I know so much. Proof of the pudding is in the tasting, so that our puja should be one-pointed. Because the soul is only one, how can you... One part of you will go to Shiva Loka, one part will go to Ganapati Loka, or one part will go to Vishnu Loka, one part will stay here. I mean, it's... You have to set your sights on the goal and then work diligently to surrender in that way. As long as the heart of the jiva is not free from the modes of nature, ananya bhakti will not arise there. So, you know, attachments are due to ignorance. I'm attached to my family or my wife. Well, that's attachment is real. But the real attachment is eternal. And the eternal attachment is the Atman and the Paramatma. And every other attachment is illusion. It's temporary. I'm attached to my body. It's illusion. It's ignorance. I'm attached to my mother, my family, my wife. It's all illusion. It's temporary. It's ignorance. So attachment is not wrong, but misplaced attachment is wrong. Attachment to the impermanent and the temporary, that's wrong. So the devatas and the demigods, they're part of this world. But Shiva is a special tattva in the sense that he showed the way. He's actually giving some blessings to enter the Braj Bhakti, to enter the mood of the gopis. Because he adopted, of all the demigods, only he adopted the mood of the gopis. Brahma, he got embarrassed when he came to Braj. Indra became embarrassed. He interfered with Krishna's lila. He offended Krishna, Brahma, Indra. But you don't see any record of Shiva doing that. Shiva became a gopi. He took on gopi bhav, so we want to also become a gopi, right? We want to become gopis. We want gopi bhav. So approaching Lord Shiva for that, that's just simply asking him, please help me become exclusively devoted. Please help me develop ananya bhakti for Krishna in your role as Gopishwar. That's it, Vasogya. Oh Shiva, make me a successful movie star. Om Namo Shivaya. This is not Krishna Bhakti. Whatever Krishna wants, he'll do. He just worships Krishna exclusively. He wants you to rise, he'll rise. He wants you to fall, you'll fall. And Shiva has to submit to that. Shiva cannot overrule Krishna. It's not that, oh, Shiva made me a successful movie star and Krishna has a different plan. Shiva's not going to say, hey, Krishna, step back. He's my worshipper. He's initiated in Krishna mantra, but he's worshipping me and I'm Ashutosh. He's easily pleased, but Krishna's on his head. He's, as it says, all the demigods are servants of Krishna. So, no, you go to the brother, you go to somebody and you ask them, the man's son, oh, can you give me something? He said, well, I don't know. I have to check with my father. No, you just give it to me. Come on, you just... No, this is all my property. My father, I can't just give you something. So then the son asks the father, oh, my friend is asking for our tape player. Can I give it to him? No, I don't. I'm not going to give that tape player to anybody. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't give you that. My father won't allow it. So it's like, oh Shiva, oh Krishna, please give me pure bhakti and I want to become a pure devotee and develop pure love and go back to God. Okay, and then close that door. Okay, now Shiva, oh Shiva, please make me successful in the movies, give me name and fame and money. Don't worry, it doesn't work. You'll get nowhere because you'll be offending Lord Shiva. first of all, you're offending Lord Shiva because you're not directing all you've already signed up as a worshiper of his Ishtadev, and now you're ignoring his Ishtadev. You're ignoring his Ishtadev and asking him for some material things. You fool! He won't give it either. He won't give it because Krishna may have a different plan. Or if Krishna says, no, make him wealthy. Do the work. Because I'm busy with Leela, so this material world is your purview. Durga's and Shiva's purview. So he's my bhakti. I like him. Money will be good for him. Give it to him. But then Shiva goes, oh, Krishna, you're a bhakti. He's worshipping me for all these things. What's your idea? Don't give him anything. I have a different plan for him. And I will reveal it to him very soon. Because of the modes of nature, we can't understand Krishna's plan because we're in ignorance. So we just think, oh, this is the plan. This is the game plan. Name, fame, success, money, power. And Shiva's in charge of these things. So, Om Namo Shivaya. Om Namo Shivaya. Om Namo Shivaya. Dhanam Dehi, Janam Dehi, Pratishtha Dehi. And Krishna's sitting there, what is this guy doing? On one side he's initiated in Vishnu mantra, Gopal mantra, Kam Gayatri. He wants me. That's his Kam, that's his desire, Kam Gayatri. And now he's over here with a Shiva. This guy is really screwed up. He turns around, he says, look at this new recruit we got over here, this new Indian guy. And Radharani says, yeah, all these Indian devotees are so screwed up, you know. He said, I like these Western devotees. I like these Western devotees. They just say Radhe Radhe and Krishna Krishna, and it's clear, you know. I mean, they may have a lot of problems, a little crazy, and they can't be steady, and they keep changing their wives all the time, and married today and divorced tomorrow. Anyway, what to do? And Krishna says, well, you know what to do. That's the way India is. it's all about you know, you can surrender according to the extent of your realization. So as your realization increases, then your surrender increases. So when you realize who is Krishna and who am I, then the surrender begins. You realize he is God, he is great, and I am part and parcel, I am small. And I should just surrender a little bit and do a little service. And that's the beginning. And then gradually, he is everything. And he's all I need. I don't want it. He's all I need, and I don't want anything else or want anyone else. And there's like just this verses in Padyavali. I think one of them is by Madhavendra Puri. He says, to hell with my morning prayers, to hell with my rituals, my puja, to hell with my... I've to hell with all these... the bathings and mantras and tantras and all these rules and regulations of Brahminical life, because I don't care anymore, because my heart has been captivated by a little boy who's crawling in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. My heart has been captivated, enthralled and attracted by this little blue boy with these tinkling ankle bells and these little shark's nails around his neck, and he's crawling in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and I'm just running after him. I don't care about anything else. Mantra, tantra, anything. So Madhavendra Puri is like the emblem of Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. So he should be our inspiration, our source of inspiration. When Prabhupada was asked, he said, Prabhupada, how are you so successful in your preaching mission? He said, there's two things that made me successful. I had complete faith in the order of my spiritual master and complete faith in the holy name of Krishna. And by Guru and Krishna, everything was accomplished. So he had complete, the order of his spiritual master was go preach in the West. And the holy name of Krishna is everything. Just chant Hare Krishna, you get everything. Worship Krishna. That's it. This is the biggest thing. Even that's the main thing, because it's not so much attaching to family. We mentioned was an impediment for Indian devotees. But that's not so bad. Family is part of the Vedic paradigm. Family is part of society. It's made of families. So family engaged in Krishna consciousness, that's favorable. there's no problem. So husband, wife, and house, and job, you know, family. So family in itself is not exactly Maya, or it doesn't have to be an impediment to Krishna consciousness. It can be an inducement to Krishna consciousness, a loyal, faithful Krishna conscious wife, and enthusiastic Krishna conscious children can be a great asset in Krishna consciousness. So families don't necessarily mean, but this thing with the demigods is a big problem. Because your family may not be a problem at all, because if they're all absorbed in Ananya Bhakti, they're all helping each other, always speaking about Krishna, worshiping Krishna, fully dedicated to the center. But there's demigod, illusions about demigods and misconceptions and attachments about demigods is probably the biggest problem to pure devotion, exclusive devotion. And there's all kinds of rationales. People say, oh, you know, but it's all connected, this, that. That's why I say the day the person does a sweep, you do an altar sweep, altar cleanup, or what they call it, not cleanup, what they call it, like spring cleaning. You know, spring cleaning in your house, every spring season you throw out all the old sofas and all the old plastic bags and junk and closets, clean your house. You have an altar cleaning, you know, sweep the altar. Shiva, what are you doing here? Anyway, thanks a lot, nice knowing you. Go back to Kailash and Ganesh, you go back and do your thing and everybody, okay. And it makes more room for Radha and Krishna's Leela also. Now they're all cramped up as soon as they start dancing. As soon as they run and Krishna on the altar and they start to dance and then they bump into this bull, Lord Shiva's bull, and then they, because Shiva's there with his bull carrier, then they turn around, they bump into, you know, this huge elephant. There's no room to dance. Imagine you go on the dance floor and there's an elephant in the middle of the dance floor. And then you go on the dance floor and there's this huge bull, right? Or in the corner there's this guy sitting in meditation, or in the other corner is this guy stuffing his face with laddus. And you're trying to enjoy the dance and you get distracted. There's no room to move. And what to speak of all the other pictures, grandma's there and granddad and all kinds of pictures they have in the altar. Unbelievable. I see it all the time. There's Radha, Krishna, Shiva, Ganesh, Durga, Indra, Surya, Kartikeya, and Grandma and Grandpa. You know, they were mediators, they were devotees, they were drunkards, and they're right there. We offer the incense. Krishna, here you go, Krishna, here's incense, and Radha, Rani, and Ganesh, and Shiva, and Grandma, and Grandpa. So they're right up there with Radha and Krishna. You could go in 15 million houses of Western devotees and you're never ever going to see Grandma and Grandpa on the altar with Radha and Krishna, guaranteed. But if you go in 100 Indian houses, at least in 90 of them, you're going to find Grandma and Grandpa on the altar. They can be on the wall, you can hang a garland on them, you can do anything, but get them off the altar, will you? Get them the hell off the altar, because the altar is Vrajadam. And what's Shiva dancing around Vrajadam for? He only had a momentary darshan and he's busy being a protector. Clean up, that's why I have an altar cleaning, I have a spring cleaning, all demigods out, jow. Grandma and grandpa back to Petri Loka, jow. You know, get out of here, you're just cluttering up the dance floor. Radha and Krishna have to dance, make room. Hey, Jack, move over, make room. You ever see, like, when you're dancing in a temple, there's a bunch of, like, deadbeats, you know, they're standing there. So then when the circle starts dancing, they push all the deadbeat devotees to the side, right? I don't know if you ever... And the guys that are fired up, they just are in the center, and their circle's getting bigger and bigger, and they're getting more enthusiastic. And the deadbeats are just against the wall. Oh, I don't dance. I don't chant. Hare Krishna. You know, but the guys that are fired up. So give Radha and Krishna room on the altar to move, to dance, to have their leela. Then you see how much happy they become. Imagine you're a dancer and your wife and your girlfriend or wife is a dancer and you go to some dance hall and it's all cluttered up with all kinds of, you can't dance, so you're not happy. Radha and Krishna are dancing. Prabhupada once said, if Radharani ever stops dancing, then the entire spiritual world will come to a halt. Don't be halt, you know, stop. It's the German word, halt. Halt, stop, halt. It would come to us, it would be no more spiritual world if Radharani stops dancing, because Krishna is moving because Radharani is moving. Krishna is dancing because Radharani is dancing. So let them dance. Just like Prabhupada went to New York and he wrote that prayer, marking Bhagavad Dharma. Oh, Radha Damodar, somehow or other you brought me to this faraway land. from Lechis and the Avadas. And somehow, you know, my name is Bhaktivedanta, so please fulfill the real purport of this name, Bhaktivedanta. I am supposed to know Anta. I am supposed to know the conclusion of all knowledge of all Veda, and I am supposed to be full of bhakti devotion for your lotus feet. So please fulfill the meaning of my name and give me that knowledge to speak so these people, these donut McDonald's heads and hot dog hearts, will understand something about Krishna consciousness and get bhakti and knowledge. And then he said, so somehow you brought me here, so make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. So beautiful. So let Radha and Krishna dance on your altar. But Radharani is shy to dance in front of the Shruti Chari gopis, right? She left the Maharasa dance because the Shruti Chari gopis were there, the Municharis, the Devis, Devakanyas, and the Siddha Mahatmas, Siddha Purushas who became Siddhas. Sit in their citizens at Bomalila. She left that Maharaj dance in Sharad Purnima and went to speak of Grandma and Grandpa. Grandma and Grandpa show up at the Rasa Mandal. And Radharani says, who the hell are they? The guy with a bow tie and a bowler hat. And who's this stupid lady with the wrinkled skin? Grandma. I mean, I don't feel any elation in this rasa dance. You follow? You have to understand everything's personal. Radha and Krishna are really there. And the extent you realize it, then your behavior will follow suit. It's a picture. It's a marble. It's a statue. So Grandpa's right there doing Nikunj Seva to Radharani. Grandma and Grandpa are making mala for Radha in their Siddhadeva. Here, meditate and respond. So this is the thing. If you hear nicely, then you can meditate nicely. And if you hear and meditate nicely, then the response will be proper. So you should realize this yourself, because how can you preach? You can't preach. You're supposed to be a preacher. Trying to, or endeavoring to be a preacher. So you have to set the real first realization and behavior. And then when there's realization and a behavior combined together, then there's power. Influential power, prabhav. Prachar, prabhav, the power of influence of preaching. You can influence other people. Because you actually realized it by, you know, study, by hearing, by meditation. Because this is the truth, what we're saying. This is not the truth. From so many angles, and more angles are there also. And we should be aikantiki bhakti, fixed only in Krishna, and have full faith in Krishna, and I fully believe that if I only worship Radha and Krishna, then all the demigods will be happy, because all the demigods are merely servants of Radha and Krishna. And I don't have to separately or independently worship them. And moreover, because we're thinking if I worship them independently or separately, they'll be pleased with me, they'll be happy with me by my worship, by my puja, by my chalices, by my prayers. And then if they're happy or pleased with me, then they'll be nice to me. They'll bless me, they'll give me things, they'll help me. But that calculation is all right if you don't worship Radha and Krishna. But if you worship Radha and Krishna, they'll be much more pleased if you dedicate everything to Radha and Krishna and always chant and hear about Radha and Krishna and always offer prayers to Radha and Krishna and never, ever, ever think of them. You have regard and respect for them. If ever the opportunity comes up to respect them or they come across your path, but you don't have to separately make any endeavor or take any time out to worship them independently of Radha and Krishna. They will consider you that you are their best bhakta and best friend if you are totally absorbed in aikantiki bhakti to Radha and Krishna. This is the best way to satisfy and please Ganesh and Shiva and Durga and all the demigods, to become a pure devotee of Radha and Krishna. So this next point says, not giving pain to any living entity. Don't harass other creatures. In the Mahabharata it says, a person who does not disturb or cause painful action in the mind of any living entity, who treats everyone just like a loving father does his children, whose heart is so pure certainly very soon becomes favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like the Bible says, whatever you do to the least of my creation, that you do unto me. So the least of his creation means whatever you do to the most insignificant portion of my creation. So one might consider that an ant is a very insignificant creature. So all this ant, you're in my way. You step on that ant, and he's dead. So God is saying in the Bible, if you step on that ant, you are also stepping on me. Whatever you do to the least of my creation, that you're doing to me. If you treat them nicely, you treat me nicely. For example, once we were on Prikamon in Vrindavan, I saw a man bending down, and he was very concerned, and he was looking at the ground and moving his hands around like this, older man. And I thought, oh, he needs some help. Maybe he's lost his contact lenses or something, or glasses, or something, keys or whatever. So I stopped and I said, you know, these Indians, I don't even like this. What's going on? What do you mean? You know, like they do with their hands, you know, like, what are you doing? Que pasa? You know, what's happening? Kiawa? What's going on? What happened? And then as I got closer to him, down on the ground level, he said to me in perfect English, which was rather astounding to start with, he said, I'm feeding the ants. Then he had a little brown bag of sugar, powdered sugar, and there was an ant hole there in the ground on the side of the Prikkha Marg, and he was giving sugar to them. And they came out, they were out eating the sugar at the entrance to their house, ant house, or whatever you call it. And he said, that's very nice. And then I was going on the Prikkha Marg, and I would see him the other days, and he was in different places along the Prikkha Marg feeding the ants. So he was thinking that these ants are devotees, bhakta ant, and the ants should get some sugar prasada from Bunky Bihari. So he offered some sugar to Bunky Bihari and gave to the ants. Prasad distribution, food for life. So food for life can go from the ants to the elephants, you know, they can go to everyone. So this is it's not giving pain to every living entity, it's giving gain. Don't give pain to other living entities, give gain. Give gain to them by giving them a chance to get prasadam. And you see that they're all part and parcel of Krishna. Treat everyone just like a loving father does his children. Actually, this is one of the qualities of sadhus that people really, really appreciate, which this grandfatherly mood of loving everyone and sharing his love with everyone, which can't artificially be done. When our heart is hard and hardened by various anarthas and degrees of self-absorption and introversion, when our heart is covered by different shells of introversion and self-indulgence and selfishness, it's very hard to emanate love, or it's very hard to emanate concern or emanate care for others because we're self-centered. Our heart is like a hard rock, and that's a sad state of honesty for most of us. But there are a few gifted souls in the world that are outward going, that their hearts are wide open. Their hearts are really wide open, and they're just gushing forth with compassion and gushing forth with genuine concern for others, love for others, compassion for others. They're few. They're few and far, far between. They are clear souls, pure souls. So I think of one person that's very close in our midst, and it's Mahavishnu Goswami. He's one Gujarati sannyasi in ISKCON. He's about 80 years old or so. You ever met him? Mahavishnu Goswami. And he was in Vrindavan giving a Bhagavad Saptaha some years ago in a Krishna Balaram temple. And I was with some friends from Delhi with their families. And he has the ability, he just overwhelms everyone with his love. The children, because he was a family man himself also, but his heart is just so clear. The children, how are you, this, that, that. He's so lovable, he's that lovable sadhu. I mean, everyone loves this person. He's so charming. And the charm is not some kind of material gift, it's actually a spiritual asset of developed consciousness, which we may say charming, but it's just very, very attractive. So this is the idea of treating everyone like a loving father does his children. And Hari Bhakti Vilas, and explains about the symptoms of the guru, the characteristics of the guru. This is one of the characteristics, is he has Vatsalya Bhav. He has the mood of a father. Vatsalya means a parental love. He has the mood of a loving father for his children, really cares for them. So we are appointed, with this quotation, Rupa Goswami is showing us from Mahabharata. It's kind of an interlude before the chapter 8, where Rupa Goswami starts speaking about different offenses to be avoided. Before we go there, there's also Vishnu Chakravartipad. He's also commenting on this point. He says, Prani Matre Udvega Tyag, giving up the harassment of other living entities. Sri Krishna becomes very quickly satisfied with those who maintain an attitude of compassion toward other living entities and do not create any kind of anxiety for them, either by body, mind, or words. Mercy is the fundamental dharma of the Vaishnavas. Very nice phrase. Mercy is the fundamental dharma of the Vaishnavas. The word dharma, actual definition of dharma, means the essential characteristic of a thing. The essential characteristic of a thing is its dharma. The dharma of sugar is sweetness. The dharma of chili pepper is hotness. The dharma of water is liquidity. So you cannot separate that quality from the thing. That inseparable essential quality of a thing is its dharma. So the inseparable essential quality of the Atma or the Jivatma is seva, service. Because we are units of service, we are particles of serving consciousness. Whether it's serving consciousness, sevaka and savya. So savya Bhagavan. Krishna is to receive our service. So either we serve Krishna, or if we turn our face, Krishna Bahir Mukh, away from Krishna, then we serve Maya. But serve we must. Service is our business. They have these phrases and mottos in different, stores or gas stations or police departments on the side of the police car. Our aim is to serve. Their real aim is to harass you. But it says, our aim is to serve the public. So service is our business. You cannot avoid, either you serve the body or you serve the nation or you serve your family or you serve your tongue, or the ultimate, you serve God. So this is the dharma of every jiva, whether jiva is an animal. You'll find the service principle is going on. The mother cat is serving the baby cat. It's there, everywhere, service. So this is this point. He says that mercy, this is the dharma of the living entity. What was it? What did he say? The fundamental principle.
Mercy.
Mercy. What are the four principles of religion?
Truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy.
Yeah, one more time. I always remember like this, MCAT. MCAT.
Mercy, cleanliness, austerity, truthfulness.
Yeah, you know, in school you have to learn all these things, so you have to give some kind of key or some association, different ways the memory works. Well, the four principles of religion, MCAT, and somehow it sounds it's stupid, and because it's stupid, you remember it. And once you remember the key, if you have some brain, then you remember, Oh, MCAT. As long as you know how to spell cat. If you spell it K-A-T, then it's problematic. MCAT, M-C-A-T, Mama, Mother, no. Mary, no. Mercy, yeah. Okay, mercy. This is one principle. Then C, cancer, no. Cleanliness, oh yeah, cleanliness is next to godliness. So this is one principle of religion. And A, MCAT. Austerity. Yeah. One should be austere, one should fast on Ekadasi, Hari Vastra, one should do Janmasthami, you have to fast, one should be control of senses, okay, austerity. Then truth, we should be truth. So like this, you can remember MCAT. So mercy is the fundamental principle of the Vaishnava. So when one lives in a holy place, or ever he meets holy men and gets an opportunity to live in their ashram, whether they be Vaishnavas or even they may be Mayavadis, but generally you'll find it in a Vaishnava section, Ram Bhaktas, Narayan Bhaktas, Krishna Bhaktas, etc., or any sadhus, they generally exhibit this quality of parental love for living entities. If you visit ashrams in Haridwar, Rishikesh, or anywhere, you'll see that the sadhu is going somewhere, and you say, where are you going? Oh, I'm taking some milk. I'm putting some milk out for the cats. I remember one ashram that in Puri where they had cows, and they were on the beach, so there were lots of cats in the ashram. So every day, they had a big tali. A tali was about 4 feet across, 4 feet in diameter. Tali, not tali. Brass tali. And they would get some... They had a lot of milk from their cows, so all the ashramites got milk, and they had a little temple there. Then they would take milk, and they would mix it with some flour or rice flour, some kind of grain or something, and make a little, like, porridge. Then they would fill the tali with it, about 2 inches milk and this rice flour. And then they would just go, Haribo, or something, and all these cats would run out from the bushes and the goshala and everywhere. And they would all pull in like airplanes around the airport, those terminals, you know, the airplane, one airplane's here, one airplane's there, and they have these round terminals, you know, one airplane pulls here, and, you know, they kind of go like bees. So the cats were 360 degrees in a circle, one cat. It's like a rasa lila for cats. Cat mandal. And they were all... And the first time I saw that, I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, these cats live here. We have to give them prasad. So twice a day, they get their prasad. We get our prasad. This makes this called samskaras. When one witnesses something like this, it makes an impression. Impression means samskaras. He's like, wow. Then they had little bird feeders here and there. Little, like, box in a tree. And they would go and put some vajra and they buy and budger on different seeds in there, and always and consequently, there's always tons of birds around their place, which, you know, making nice sound. So they're feeding the birds, feeding the cats, and then of course feeding any human beings that came. And like they would make wheat balls sometimes, and then they would go for darshan, Jagannath temple, and they make a ball of wheat. And they would stop by that's Rover. Narendra Sarovar, they stop by Narendra Sarovar, they go down to the water and make these little balls like they do at Radhakund, you see, feeding the turtles. Dum, dum, dum. I said, what are you doing? He said, oh yeah, these are the residents of Puri, we're feeding them. So this kind of broad-mindedness, you know, that these are all our brothers, our bhaktas. These are all bhakta fish, and bhakta bird, and bhakta cat. And so this is what the Mahabharata is saying here. The Krishna becomes very pleased with this type of attitude, this kind of viewpoint. A person who does not disturb or cause painful action in the mind. That's one thing. That's kind of like neutral. Okay, I don't disturb them. I don't disturb any living entity. I don't cause any pain. I go my way, you go your way. Live and let live. That's the niyama and yama. That's the negative aspect. But who treats everyone like a loving father does his children. So what does that mean? He treats everyone, a loving father means the loving father feeds his children, doesn't he? He feeds his children, he cares for them. If they're unhappy, he makes them happy. If they're sad, he makes them happy. If someone goes in that positive way, he treats everyone like a loving father does his children. He soon becomes favored by the Supreme Personality of God. So this, what we find is that when that devotees of a high caliber like this, they have this broad heart, they want to take care of everyone. And when we do this type of activity of distributing food to others, other living entities, it's very good medicine for the heart. It's very good medicine for heart disease. Because most of us in Kali Yuga, we suffer from heart disease. We're extremely closed-hearted, or what they say, tight-fisted heart. We don't want to share anything with anyone or give anything to anybody. Because now we think that this is a safe policy, this is a good policy, to keep everything for me. That's why I say it's introversion. Introversion, it's self-absorption. Everything within, self-absorption, introversion, selfishness. Because everything is going in, it means contraction. And contraction means concentration. Concentration means getting tighter and tighter and tighter, which means your heart gets smaller and smaller and smaller as the pressure increases. The greater the contraction, the smaller the size becomes, right? If you're this big, then you contract more, and smaller, smaller, smaller. But the Vaishnava conception is paradukaduki. It should be, giving, giving, more and more and more. And as you give more, then you expand more and more and more. Give the knowledge, give your wealth, give your food, give everything. This is so prevalent in Vrindavan. The people, only in Vrindavan, nowhere else in India do people give away food. Not in Mayapur Puri, anywhere, nowhere. They have this broad concept. You come to my house, take food. Take some food. Take some flour, take some roti, take some sabji, take something. Isn't it? It's extraordinary. Because this is the Braj is the center of Vaishnavism. Because what is the center of Vaishnavism? The center of Vaishnavism is the worship of Radha and Krishna. This is the topmost expression of Vishnu Bhakti. Vaishnavism means the worship of Vishnu. Those who worship Vishnu as their Ishta. So the topmost expression of Vishnu Bhakti is Krishna Bhakti. And the topmost expression of Krishna Bhakti is Radha Krishna Bhakti, which is Braja Bhakti or Gopika Bhakti. So here, Vrindavan is full of nothing but gopis and gwals. It's nothing but gopis and gwals. And it's these gopis and gwals that they are the charitable ones. If you go downtown Vrindavan and knock on Agarwal's house or Gupta's house, they'll get a gun and tell you to get out of there. They won't give you anything. And they have crores of rupees up their sleeves. They won't give any roti. But it's the gopis and the gopas who are coming in the line of the gopis and gwals. They are the ones that are possessing the Braja Bhakti. This topmost Radha Krishna Bhakti, because they're not so involved with paisa and money and Lakshmi Puja, Lakshmi Narayan Puja. They love Radha and Krishna as much as they can, and to a great extent. They're the ones that are giving the madhukari. They're the ones who are giving the rotis and the atta. And this is the topmost expression of Dharma. It's Dharma distributes itself. Radha and Krishna are the highest expression of devotion, of God, love of God is between Radha and Krishna, the greatest expression of divine love. And they combine together as Mahaprabhu to distribute this type of all-encompassing, selfless love. Mahaprabhu's Prem Sankirtan movement. So it's very good for us to treat everyone just like a loving father does his children. It's like Saint Francis of Assisi. He used to say, brother dog, brother tree, brother cloud, brother sun, brother moon. They're all my brothers. Why are they my brothers? Because we have the same father. No, someone can't be your brother unless you have the same father. Unless you're an Indian, then you have... Everyone says they're the brother. Everyone's his brother, but just 10 different fathers. Cousin brother and second cousin brother and this and that. From the same village. He's my brother. Well, we were born in the same village. So this is the idea here. So, any questions on this point? The question is that we shouldn't cause distress to any other living entity. But what about when insects attack Tulsi? So then there's different. There's Guru Shastra and Sadhu. So some of these dilemmas or predicaments, of course, have been brought before the saints and sadhus. And because their knowledge is so vast, they're able to draw on this vast knowledge and give suitable praman or shastric evidence in order to mold our behavior in a proper way. So in this regard, Prabhupada was asked the same question. But what about when various predators and insects attack Tulsi? What to do? Can we kill them? Should we let them chew up Tulsi and destroy Tulsi and watch Tulsi die and say, well, Tulsi, that's the way it goes. Bye-bye. Or should we act? Or how should we act? And what do we do in this situation? So the answer that we're told by our acharyas is that, according to Shastra, that the devotees, if a devotee is attacked, or the Lord is attacked by if someone is attacking a devotee or is attacking the Lord, are they good or bad? They're considered the enemy. Someone who attacks is an enemy. Someone who attacks Tulsi is a demon. So demons should be dealt with properly. Cut out their tongue, defeat them, upturn their philosophy, or drive them away in some way, or kill them or whatever. Because we're Brahmins, and we don't usually kill the enemy, but we disarm them in some way or send them away. Like, for example, the mice maybe go in the deity room and chew up all the deity's outfits. So that's not very nice. All this, it's okay, the mice has to eat something. Let them eat Radharani's dress. Let them eat holes in Radharani's dress. Or they don't eat holes, they just go in there and pass stool and urine and sleep there during the winter. So, is that okay? It's not okay. So a Kshatriya or some other one may deal severely with that rat and maybe kill the rat. But the Vaishnava is usually more soft-hearted. He'll get a trap, like all these Brijvasis do. And he'll catch that rat in a live trap, and he'll take him out and throw him in the field somewhere. And then you buy some plastic covers, and you make a nice little mire, and you protect the deity's outfits. And so many things you do to protect the deity's outfits. So this is how we deal with the aggressors. So there's many, many laws of praman which we can deal with, is react to the situation. And also in Manusamhita, so there's six types of aggressors that can be killed. One is a poison giver, he tries to poison you. One who tries to take your wife. One who tries to burn your house. One who tries to kill you. One who tries to occupy your property. Or one who's trying to destroy your friend, attacking your friend. So attacking your wife, well, Tulsi's my wife. Tulsi's my mother. Tulsi's my sister. Tulsi's my god sister. She's my sakhi. She's my guru. For example, we have one Tulsi plant outside, and we noticed every time we go out to pick leaves that there's some insect was just chewing them up the leaves. So I read in one Tulsi book, they said there's some insects that come at night. They live in the soil and they come out at night because they're like chores. They come out at night and chew up the leaves and then go back in the soil. So when you come in the morning, you see a bunch of chewed up leaves. So you have to inspect, to catch those guys, you have to be like 007, right? So you go out at night with a flashlight, and then you can see, oh, there are you little buggers. And so, of course, you can do some chemical sprays or some natural rhododendron or, I don't know, some kind of turmeric water. There's different ways you can go around and try to deter them or poison them or whatever. Or you can catch them in the act, you know, at night. So this particular, I thought maybe this was this type of insect. So I didn't go out at night, but I said, well, let me look closer in the daytime. So I got my glasses, I looked, and it was some green insect, the same color as Tulsi, like grasshopper type guy, and the same color as the Tulsi leaves. And he was just sitting on a leaf, I couldn't see him. I put on my glasses, and I saw it was a different size, a baby and a mother or something like that. So then I just caught him. I just caught him like this and put him in a can, a tiffin. I caught two or three of them. I just threw him over the fence in the yard, so he could eat something out there, a man in the garden. I did that 2 days in a row, and now there's no more chopped nails. So it was a simple, I alleviated the problem without killing the insects. But even if I had just squished that guy, he says, you rascal, you're eating these, I could have just squished him, I would not suffer any reaction. But it is our nature not to kill. Like, we're permitted to kill a poisonous snake, There's no reaction. But generally, the Vaishnavas would rather catch the snake and put him outside. I saw in Radha Damodara when I was staying there, it was about a 12-foot long cobra. And he's right under the steps. I was just coming out from Mangalarti. And Baba, from across the way, near Malchand Goswami, said, "Maharaj, wait. There's a big snake sleeping, or I don't know, he's right under the step there." And I went, I was about to step down and cross almost over where he was. I went, "Ooh, Hare Krishna, namaste." I backed up, you know, said, "Well, I'll go to Mangalarti tomorrow." And he said, "Wait, don't," you know, so I went back in Prabhupada's room and chanted. And then they called him Bajari, he's the kind of fearless type. And he got a broomstick. And he says, "Come on, snake," and then he got the snake, and they don't like to be, you know, disturbed too much. So he went like this, and he went around the, here's like the broomstick, he was on the end, so he's going around the stick, you know, he wraps his tail around the stick for support, and he was like this at the end of the stick. I was watching from a good distance. And the guy's going, and then he would fall off the stick, and then get, and wrap him, and then he would pick, like, "Oh, this fool boy, this fearless Bajari boy." His cobra's like this, and he had his broomstick, and he bamboo stick, and he just kind of shuffled them and slide them out the front door, and then he went out the door and went wherever he went. That was the end of him. I mean, he didn't die. He didn't kill him. And oftentimes I've heard, I've been in another Prishvasi's house, and there was a cobra there, and they would catch him. And I say, "Oh, you know, will you kill him?" I said, "No, will you kill him?" He said, "No, he's Shiva Bhakta." It's okay. He's Shiva Bhakta. You know, Shiva has cobras around his neck. Of course, they represent Sankarsha. This is Shadeva, not the Shesh. They're not just an ordinary cobra. Said, "No, he's Shiva Bhakta. He's a Bhakta Shiva. How can you kill him?" When they see a mouse, they say, "Ganesh." So like this, the viewpoint of the devotee is something extraordinary. So this is our Shastric Praman, is that we try to remove these insects from Tulsi without killing them, or we administer some sprays which, you know, it encouraged them to go. Or I saw Janani Bas, who's a pretty learned in many of these deity things, being the head of Bajari in Mayapur. He was out in Prabhupada's garden with a Tulsi plant, and he was very attentively doing something for a couple of hours, and I passed by a couple of times, and I said, "What are you doing?" And this Tulsi plant has these little black bugs or whatever, aphids or whatever they call them. And I'm picking them off with this cotton and alk water, and I'm, you know, liberating them. They're dying in the holy dawn. So he wasn't like saying, "Oh, come on, boys, I'll give you another place to live." He was liberating them. So, you know, so there's different ways. Like the Brijvasis, they see a cobra and they say it's a devotee Lord Shiva, and they take it outside. In 1934 in Mayapur, when Prabhupada was visiting the Yoga Beat, and he, or maybe it was 1931, because I don't think he was initiated yet. And Bhakti Sanatha was walking on the veranda of his house, and a yoga peat, and then he ordered, he said, "Oh, Atula Nanda Brahmachari, there's a snake, kill that snake." And there was a cobra crawling across the yard, so he caught the snake and he killed it, and they burned it. And Abhay Charan Aravinda was disturbed. He said, "Oh, how could Guru Maharaj, he's a saintly person, he's an Acharya, he's a Mahabhagavat, how could he kill this innocent living entity? He ordered him, kill that snake." So my mind was disturbed. I was thinking, "My guru, there's something wrong with my guru. Or he made some aparad. Why? There must be some anger in him." Then later, I read in the shastras, Srila Prabhupada said, later I read in the shastras that if a poisonous living entity, a snake or a scorpion, is killed, there's no sin if someone kills a poisonous living entity. It's something like this. So then I was relieved that my Guru Maharaj was following the Shastra. So this is the situation. Tulsi is so dear to Krishna. So it's just like if a devotee is getting attacked and we defend a devotee, and in the course of defending that devotee we kill the aggressor, then at least in the eyes of Krishna there's no offense. The government may put us in jail or something. But in terms of dharmic law and Manu Samhita and Yamaraj and the whole firmament, there's no reaction, there's no sin. So tomorrow we'll start with chapter 8, offenses to be avoided.